Wow. Legends only on this podcast. We usually say it and don't mean it, but this time we actually mean it.
Every former guest apologizes.
Yeah. Y'all nobody compared to this dude. I'm going to send out formal apologies after this. This is absolutely incredible. As someone who is a big Arsenal fan, I used to hate this dude. But you know what I hate him more? How much I like this dude. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, this happens a lot. You know, there's a lot of people I grew up with playing with on FIFA.
Yeah.
And then you meet them in person.
Yeah.
And you know how to say, don't meet your heroes.
Yeah.
Meet your heroes.
Yo, meet your hero. Well, not all of them. And we'll talk about it off record, but not all of them. Don't meet all of them. But ladies and gentlemen, legend. Tottenham legend, unfortunately. Yeah. Also spent some time in Toronto, so he knows his way around these streets. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only. The purest definition of bucket. When I say bucket, this is Luka Doncic is holding the trophy right now. But before that was this man, because everywhere he went, he scored the one, the only. Jermaine Defoe, everybody.
Jermaine, what's up, brother?
Well, thank you, thank you.
Not only Jermaine here, but also please round of applause for the Premier League trophy. Yes. Shout out to the Premier League for bringing the trophy into our studio.
Right. You played for Tottenham. This is what the trophy looks like. This is what the Premier League trophy
all right, you've never seen it. I can't remember the last time you said it.
Is this how you welcome my guests?
It's
jokes only.
Always.
I did start by saying I love this
actually dude. I actually did something with Girl Clichy recently.
Really?
And you can imagine a banter going back and forth. But we get it.
And this is where I want to start with you, because I've met formally at the Premier League Fan Fest in Kansas City. We're hanging out a little bit, and we've hosted and emceed a lot of the Fan Fest, so a lot of the Premier League legends come by. What has been your experience, like even the banter? You having a banter with an American Arsenal fan.
Mm-hmm.
What is that perception of the American Premier League fans, and how does it sort of mix with what you know the culture of it is, especially in London with banter and stuff like that? How do we compare?
Do you know what? It's quite refreshing to be honest. I think it's nice to come, like I said, to a different country like America and receive the same sort of banter that you get at home from an Arsenal fan.
Mm-hmm.
But that shows you how big the Premier League is. So you can imagine, like, I'm in a position where I can say to Arsenal fans, well, you know, you don't get nothing for finishing second. Unfortunately. Do you get what I'm saying?
I feel like he's speaking directly to me, but he's looking at you.
Yeah. I'm looking at you, and then you can... And then you can tell him.
Translate it for me. Get the hope.
Yeah, but like, I mean, it's like you speak about the fan fest. I was blown away, to be honest. And even though I spent time obviously in the MLS, so I always knew that sort of like the league was obviously growing, the football, because obviously basketball, baseball, NFL, and all that sort of stuff. But in terms of the football in the Premier League, I was completely blown away. I never thought I'd ever see, you know, fans from, you know, all over America come together. All different teams, different shirts in one place to watch a weekend of Premier League football. I thought I'd never be able to see that. And it was amazing.
I had a great moment with Ian Wright where he was sort of looking out. We were hosting, we were waiting. This was 2 years prior. And he was sort of looking out. And you could see he kind of got a little bit of a glimmer. Maybe not a tear, but like he had an emotional moment.
Yeah.
And I said, yo, Boo, are you all right, dude? They're like, yo, Unk, you good? Ian. and now he was like, nah. He's like, I'm just looking out. There's like, at this point, maybe like 2,000 people all wearing Premier League shirts, all mixed. Yeah. There's Liverpool fans here, Arsenal fans here, Manchester United fans here. They were Bournemouth fans back there. He's like, I'm seeing all this, and I don't think this could ever happen in my country. Like, we couldn't all just mix and just celebrate the sport. No. Did you think you had a similar moment when you were sort of looking out in Kansas City? It's huge. You could see everyone sort of in this big slope. Do you think you had a similar moment?
Yeah, and I think Wright is always emotional. But sometimes, I think sometimes it's only normal because obviously for myself, Wrighty, obviously I was here, Alan Shearer, and all the other legends that have sort of like been over and done stuff like this. But I think you have a moment where you stand back and think, you know what, I've been a part of that. And when you're playing, you're so caught up in just, you know, playing and recovering and playing. And so you don't really think about it, you know. And I think when you step away from it, you actually retire, you can actually reflect. And you have that moment where you think, wow, like, you don't realize. You know, you come to America and to see, like you said, like all the different, you know, supporters from different teams. I mean, I spoke to a guy and he had like a Chelsea top on, and he said to me, "I'm a Tottenham fan." So I was like, "This is a bit crazy."
Did you hit your head?
Yeah. And then he,
colorblind.
Yeah. But then he said to me, "I'm coming back tomorrow. in my Arsenal shirt. I was like, this guy. But I mean, the beauty of football, how football just brings everyone together. And like I said, just the power of the Premier League is amazing.
Yeah, it's so funny because here, like, football shirts for a long time was like a style thing. Like, you wore it. Like, obviously, we follow the sport, so we care. So we have the kits that we wear. But, like, it was just whatever matches your clothing. I remember I was in Atlanta. It was a guy with a big, big Cuban link chain on. And underneath, he had, like, a super retro Manchester United shirt. And I go, hey, you guys are having a pretty good season. Clearly, this was a while ago. And he goes, man, I don't even know what I'm wearing, but people keep walking up to me, talking to me about this. It just matches my sneakers.
Yeah.
Whereas if you go to England wearing a shirt, sometimes you can't go into certain cafes.
But not even a shirt, colors.
Yeah, just the colors.
Even colors, you get Tottenham fans.
Yeah.
And if they have, for instance, a red t-shirt on, then, you know, you can imagine the stick that they'll get from their friends.
Yeah,
you know,
of course.
That's just what it's like. But it was right when he said that. I could never imagine, you know, seeing something like that in England. I just don't think it would happen.
That's a shame, man.
Well, I want to get back to the Premier League a little bit, but, you know, on our show, we talk MLS a lot. We got a lot of MLS fans. You are a person whose name comes up a lot, right? Whenever people are talking about designated players that have played in Major League Soccer, you know, more in the Toronto FC top. And when we were at the Fan Fest, we were doing some stuff for Avery Dennison. And I told you, I was like, bro, one of the most iconic moments in Major League Soccer history is when
I know what you're gonna say.
When you that free kick, that free kick that you wanted to take. Who was it that took it?
Gilberto.
Yeah, Gilberto, right?
Yeah, yeah.
and this, I think it's like either MLS or like 433. They post it every like 3 months.
So it circles all the time.
it never goes away.
The amount of time people send it to me, and I'm just like, this was years ago.
Yeah.
Like, it's honestly, it's unbelievable. But like,
it's a movie. It's a movie watching you and your...
The roller coaster is crazy.
The smile after. Yeah. You know what it was? I was so embarrassed because he got... To be fair to him, we were actually close. We signed at the same time, me, him and Michael Bradley. And he hadn't scored up until that point. So obviously he grabbed the ball and I said, you're not taking a free kick. Right. He's like, no. I said, you're not taking it. So he in a moment, so I just punched it at his hand. And then I thought, you know what? Let him take the free kick. Probably thinking, and listen, it's my team. I wanted him to score, but I thought like, the chance of him to score. Anyway, when he smashed it in the top corner, at that moment, I know the camera's going to go on me. So I'm flustered and embarrassed. So I don't know what to do. So I just started smiling at it. But I mean, when you watch it back, it is a movie. It's so funny.
You know what I think about that moment? Because you did punch it out of his hand. You ever try to open a can or a bottle and you can't and someone else comes and opens it? You're like, I loosened it for you. When you hit it, you transferred your stardust onto it.
That energy. Okay, go on, finish.
That's how I view it.
Or he was angry. Uh-huh. Maybe he was embarrassed that I did that.
Right.
And he just put his... But it was an unbelievable goal.
And it was a rocket.
Yeah, that was his first goal when it was just like...
His first goal.
Yeah. And credit to him, because even when you watch it, I smiled and he come over and he actually celebrated with me. He embraced me, where maybe someone would have been like, no.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It could have easily been a moment of like, oh, look how...
He had an I told you so right there.
Yeah. It could have been like,
Jermaine Defoe's problematic. He's difficult. He's not supportive of his teammates.
Yeah, exactly.
And you just,
that came later.
You took your L.
I took it on the chin. I was like, you know what? Fair play. The next one, you can have it.
Yeah. But that's the kind of player you are. You're like, whatever. The team's scoring. Yeah. We're winning.
Yeah, of course.
You said something on a British podcast, which always drove me nuts. And I brought this up to you at FanFest. You said that it was weird when you got on the plane, you went left and everyone went right. Talk to me about that moment.
Again, uncomfortable. So obviously the designated players, Michael Bradley. So we got to the airport and I think the first game was against Seattle, 5-hour flight, which is again, it's probably...
That's you going to Russia if you're in the Premier League.
For one game, you travel sort of like 2 days before, after the game you stay and then fly home. So it's like 4 days effectively. And I remember just going on a plane and me and Michael was in business class. So we sort of like sat there and I'm looking around thinking, there's many seats in business class, but it's the whole squad. So already I'm sort of like scratching my head. The manager came on, walked past me. I was like, oh, this is a little bit uncomfortable. So I'm sort of like slumped in my chair a little bit. And then all the rest of the team went to the back of the plane. I was just like, I remember saying to Michael Bradley, I said, is this normal? He said, this is just the way it is.
Michael Bradley's got the eye covers on.
Yeah.
He's chilling. Got his feet in the little slippers.
He's chilling.
Yeah. He's like, I don't know what you're talking about, bro. Broke boy's in the back. DP's in the front.
And he's just like, I don't know. For me, it was just something. It's just so strange. And it got time taking used to, getting used to that. But and again, from the other players, you can imagine that the stick that we got sitting at the front of the plane, which is normal.
Did you have to pay for all the hangout dinners?
Yeah, we did actually. Yeah. And what was strange as well, when we used to travel, like we get to the hotel, because in England, you get to the hotel, you go to your room, you have your
beans on toast.
You have the beans on toast. You have the pre-match meal the night before the game, and go back to your room. You get a massage and you unwind and you prepare for the game. I went to Toronto. So you get to the hotel, drop your bags off, and the boys get changed in normal clothes, and you go out for a walk, go to the shops, go shopping, do that. So yeah, it was completely different. But I mean, just the culture changed for me. I loved it. I just embraced it. It was brilliant.
You couldn't do that. A Premier League team couldn't do that in England. Go for a walk. Tottenham's walking around whatever, you know, whatever other town. Like, I guess Crystal Palace, you wouldn't travel to.
I know.
You couldn't do that in Manchester.
No, it just wouldn't. It just wouldn't happen. So obviously, when I saw it, I remember coming down to the lobby and I said, the boys go. I was like, where are you going? It's not. I'm just going to go for a walk. So what are we allowed? Like, and right now, so I knew the manager because I played with the manager. But even so, I thought, what are we allowed to just... Well, game tomorrow. So yeah, so it was different.
We've heard even the similar things from we've had like MLS players on that then go to like Liga MX.
Yeah.
And then it's the same thing. They go outside, they go take a walk because that's what they're used to in MLS. Yeah. And then everybody's like, you cannot do that
because you can't do that.
People are gonna stamp
the newspaper will bring it up tomorrow.
Yeah, you just don't get hassled on that, but it was just completely different. But the plane story, I mean, that was mad.
Yeah, yeah. I love, and again, they always like keep looping around and cycling, just like your like Jermaine Defoe stories. And that's why I also wanted to talk to you about just your like post-career, because your post-career is like a little bit after like social media got more popular, podcasts got more popular. And you, to me, as I'm scrolling on like TikTok and stuff, you are like the streets is always remembering you. You know what I mean? Like you are now... there's like a little bit of a resurgence, a reminder.
You're like a legend in the ends. You know what I mean? While also being a legend in the game.
What I love is that even like I think for American football fans, we have to learn what the culture is like in England of like how people talk about former players and all this stuff. Yeah. And you are a person that I just constantly see people screaming about to each other. Like, no, he was one of the top 10 strikers and one of the best finishers. And people are just like, why are they so angry?
Our producer is the Tottenham. He's going crazy. He's looking at him. He was like, yes, dude, he's the best. Yeah.
Carter is, I'm sure he'll probably say this again, but he is the reason he is a Tottenham fan. You are the reason he is a Tottenham fan. So.
Really?
So you're the blame.
Love that, my friend.
You're the blame.
To be honest, listen, I played with some, and about that time, amazing players. Like some of the players that you know I played with there was amazing. So, but yeah, it's funny you say that though, because I see a lot of stuff. And obviously, like you said about that, obviously the podcast, and you get the different opinions, and people say nice things. And yeah, it's like you said, from the streets, from the ends, and that's how I always approached that. That's how I always played. I was one of those players who didn't really need motivating, because when I was a young kid, all I wanted to do is play football. You know, I always felt like when I was younger, growing up, I always felt like I had to work harder than the person next to me. And I just took that into my career. You know, I trained 100% every single day. You know, everything I did in terms of my recovery, my diet, I did that. It's probably that's why I played until I was 39. And even at 39, I still felt like I could play for another like 2 years after.
What was your diet, right? Did I read that you were like mostly vegan and every once in a while you'd give yourself a piece of fish or something?
No, pescatarian.
Pescatarian.
So I'm pescatarian. But yeah, I got to a point where I just thought, you know what? How could I sort of like prolong my career? How do I have that longevity? So I decided to obviously not eat meat. These are small changes, but it could make a big difference. Obviously turned a pescatarian. And it was funny though, because I remember I got back into the England squad at 34. And I scored against Lithuania at Wembley. And I remember going through the mix zone, and I just felt like at the time, instead of like, there was more questions about my diet than the actual game and playing and scoring a goal. It was like, how have you done it? And I remember just saying, like, quite blasé. I was like, yeah, I've changed my diet a little bit. I'm one of those people as well. I ask a lot of questions. So I'll speak to a nutritionist. I'll speak to the doctor. What can I do to make sure I'm playing longer and less injuries and stuff like that? And obviously, because I said that, in the mix zone, it was just like this big thing. Like he's a pescatarian or he's a vegan, and all. Like it was crazy to the point where
in England, that's like how could he?
No, but everyone thought I was a vegan. So I remember when I went to Rangers, I was at home. I thought, let me just go on Instagram Live day before the game, show the fans what I'm cooking. So I've got a nice piece of sea bass. So as I'm making the sea bass, I'm reading the comments. I am getting battered by the fans. Vic, you shouldn't be. You're vegan. You're eating fish. Blah 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 blah. Man, I had to come off it. I had to press alive. I had to press stop. And I was so confused. I was just like, who said I was a vegan?
Worst insults you can get.
Yeah.
Can't believe you're eating fish. No. I was like, wow.
You betrayed us. You had the whole vegan Instagram live.
Like a woke crowd.
Yeah. All I want to do is make some nice sea bass and show you.
Yeah. Christian mentioned how you're beloved. One of the things that used to frustrate me so much when I would, you know, North London derbies is like, bro, you, there's something about you where if somebody said what made Jermaine Defoe special, the only way I could answer is you had to see him live because there was something about you. You play so instinctually.
Yeah.
You know, one thing, first of all, is from a standstill to you go from zero to 100 faster than a Tesla. There's something about you where I'm like, how did he just took a step. How is he already in full speed? It's so frustrating, but also like instinctual. And it makes people admire you to the level where everyone, like, what's the story in 09 when you had left Tottenham, you were at Portsmouth. And a dentist called you and let you listen to the fans still singing your name.
Yeah. It was crazy because obviously I left Tottenham, and at the time I didn't think I was going to leave. To be honest, one day Ramos was the manager, but obviously my affiliation with Harry Redknapp, you know, from a young kid at West Ham,
mm-hmm.
and also as well, you know, the Portsmouth team was unbelievable. We won the FA Cup.
Was this Peter Crouch era?
Me and Peter Crouch, even before Crouch, it was me and Milan Baroš.
Wow.
Milan Baroš, people forget he got golden boot in the Euros in 2004. Then we had Sully Montari and Lassana Diarra.
Uh-huh. These are some Barclays era names.
Nico Crenshaw,
who went to Tottenham with you now.
Yeah, Crenshaw. And the two centre-backs, Sol Campbell and Sylvain Distan.
Mm-hmm.
Herman Arrydison and Glenn Johnson, David James in goal. So this is full of internationals. Only Harry Redknapp could do that. So so I went there, played in a great team and that. And I remember Harry left Portsmouth and went to Tottenham. So, of course, I'm going to think, surely he's going to bring me back. And I remember there was obviously speculation. And the club dentist, who I still obviously kept in contact with, Pete, there was a home game. And I remember he phoned me and he said, you need to listen to this. The fans are singing your name. And I was like, not a lot of things surprised me. But when I heard that, I thought, this ain't normal. I'm a Portsmouth player now. And the Spurs fans, and even though there's speculation, there's no guarantee I'm going to come back. But it's almost like they forced it. And
but you're not thinking this isn't normal. This gotta like touch your heart,
of
bro.
Course. But I was surprised. I was like, wow, this is crazy because I was at Tottenham. Yeah, I had a good relationship with the fans, but I play for a different club now. And the fact that they're still singing my name, you can imagine what that feels like. You can't even put that into words. So obviously, when I ended up signing back to Tottenham, and I remember I walked on a pitch, and it's just like honestly, it was just stuff that you know you dream of as a kid. Amazing.
Yeah.
Damn.
But it's interesting getting that kind of adoration. I mean,
the last time somebody called me and said, you need to listen to this, they just farted into the phone. You know what I mean? I don't have, there's all nobody right. got my back like this, bro.
You know, Alexis cried.
Yeah. And I said, Grandma, stop doing this. You know? Why are you doing this?
It's
yeah.
Bitch,
this bro. Is not why we got you the phone, Abuela.
Loud, yeah.
No, man. I mean, it's to get that kind of adoration. I mean, I would imagine, like even like you said, like you played the game and you felt like you had to work harder than the next person. But I don't imagine you're sort of chasing that kind of love or glory. You just want to like kind of do right by the supporters. And
yeah, I just think it's as players, it's your duty to give something back to the supporters. I think the supporters play a big part in terms of, you know, working around the clock to buying their season tickets, to coming and support the team, to traveling to support the team, you know, and getting that sort of love that you get from the fans. And for me, that's what football's about. You know, this is why you do it. I think nothing else gives you a better feeling. And this is why when you finish playing, you know, and people talk about, you know, do you miss playing? Of course you miss playing, but more than anything, takeaway, lifestyle, it doesn't matter. More than anything is to score a goal in front of your home fans, you know, the people that appreciate you, appreciate the hard work that you've put in from a young kid. For me, there's no better feeling.
What is it that you miss the most? Is it the dopamine rush, or is it the fact that, and we've spoken to a lot of footballers, it seems like the moment you're playing, and I think this happens for us comedians, when I'm on stage, nothing else matters.
No, peace.
But anything, bills that are due, trouble with my family, wifey mad at me, all of that just
yeah. disappears, and now you're in the zone. It's just me and this audience.
Yeah. And the feeling is nothing like it. You like, you can't even describe the feeling. But not for me. It's not just the goals. It was. And you speak about dopamine. Dopamine obviously gets released when you've scored the goal, whatever you're doing. But even the thought of something, all of a sudden, it's just like, because even when I used to wake up on a match day, in the morning, I'm having my pre-match meal. And I'm sort of like getting that dopamine. I'm getting that feeling. I'm trying to paint pictures in my head about scoring goals. Like on the bus, going to the stadium, you know, putting my boots on. Just everything. And just walking out the tunnel and just like living the dream. Like all these, the pictures that you've painted over the years from a young kid. You know what? Imagine playing in the Premier League. Because I was obsessed with football from a kid. Like literally obsessed. Growing up watching the likes of Alan Shearer, Ian Wright, Robbie Fowler, all these legends. And just hoping one day that you get an opportunity to play in the best league in the world. And then when you actually get there, you just think, you know what? I want to stay here as long as possible. So that sort of like that motivates you.
Yeah. Is it one of those things? I mean, this happens to me, I think, and it happens to us in like our careers in comedy. Like you dream so much about an opportunity or being in a certain room, and then you get there and you're like, man, it's kind of dusty in here. It's not even like that big a deal.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
Like when it comes to the reality of like, can you talk to about when you actually get there that it's much more normal than it might seem from the outside?
I've cried on a football pitch, and people think like to have that sort of like feeling where it brings you to tears during a game. I've had not many times, maybe three times. I had it when I scored the fifth goal against Wigan, because obviously me being obsessed, when I scored the fourth, I looked at the clock and I thought, I need to score one more, because if I score one more goal, then I'm the third player to do it alongside Alan Shearer and Andy Cole. So these are two players that I grew up watching. So all of a sudden I'm thinking, I've got an opportunity to be alongside these players that I grew up watching. For me, it was just the craziest thing ever, and I couldn't let that opportunity go. And I remember when I scored the fifth goal, I looked up at my box and I saw my family, and I just got emotional. I was just like, thank God for this, because this, my life could have been a lot different, right? And when I scored the volley against Newcastle for Sunderland, oof. And the reason why I got emotional was because obviously the magnitude of the game, the roof came off. And I don't know, sometimes when you look around, you think, how am I the one to make all these 45,000 people happy? You know, mum, dad, kid, like all these people. It was just like, it was so overwhelming. But like, this is what football does. It's the best.
It's great. I mean,
to have that much control is going to be crazy.
Yeah, but it's like, I remember even at the FanFest. I mean, I'm not to necessarily compare the Premier League legends we meet or footballers we meet, but there's such a genuineness from you. When I even first met you, I'm like, I have to remind myself that you are Jermaine Defoe that did all these things in the Premier League. You don't carry yourself like, yo, I'm Defoe's in the building.
Yeah, you don't have that diva gene.
There's almost a little bit of like, when people show their gratitude to you, that you want to show your gratitude to them for appreciating you and everything that you did. Like, there's a real humility when you interact with people.
I don't have that in me. I'm like, you're welcome.
No, but I think...
Stand back, please.
Yeah, stand back. The boss is here. Yeah.
My security, you can't see them, but...
No, but I think it's... I've been lucky that, you know, I grew up in a great family. Like, my mum... Like a working class background, you know, all I saw as a young kid, all I saw was my nan and granddad work around the clock to provide. My mum was pregnant at 17, had me at 18. And so that's all I saw really is hard work. You know, I got a lot of love from the people around me. And obviously growing up, you know, I got a lot of support. And then even like when I went into the youth team at West Ham, I was in the youth team, but the senior pros were good people. Paolo Di Canio, Trevor Sinclair, Rio Frank. These are good people. And even getting in the England squad, you know, going to another level and speaking to people like David Beckham, who's a humble man, you know, an iconic figure, you know, beyond football. So when you have all these people around you, I think you can only be like that. You can only be humble. And I think it's the best way. And like you said, when people give me compliments, yeah, of course, it's a nice feeling. But along the way, I do realize there's a lot of people that's played their part. You know, you can't do it on your own. Like you need your teammates, for instance. Or you need the kit man that's going to like give me everything I need, all my tools, make sure my boots is clean, make sure you give me the right size of my kit, all the small details. The chef's in the kitchen, this is what I want. Can you provide this for me so I can go out and perform? So all the people over the years that's played their part, I think you just have to appreciate them.
That's why it's called the club, right? You need everybody.
You need everyone. Because it's like a machine. If there's if you've got a department that's not pulling their weight, then for in my opinion, it's not going to work. For the players, you're not going to be able to go out and execute what you need to.
You don't ever score like you scored 5 goals. You didn't walk into the training center the next day and not one person walked by where you're like, this dude had nothing to do with it though. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're like, we can get rid of this guy, right? Yeah. I think you could step it up. You saw me score 5 goals.
But the thing is, you never, like, even when I first started playing, and I scored a lot of goals in the youth team at West Ham. If someone said to me, you score 5 goals in the Premier League, you know, one day, or 5 goals and a half in the Premier League, I would be like, no way. Because the league is, there's no easy game.
Yeah.
And even when I was playing, and now there's no easy game in the Premier League. And I just felt like, and even when I scored the 5 goals, I didn't get too sort of like, I thought, I need to do this again. Maybe not score 5, but I need to be at the same level in terms of performance, because if you don't, then there's someone else that can sort of like take your place in that. So, I mean, like just like I said, I was living a dream, and of course you look back and you think, wow, just amazing memories.
No, I love hearing the ambition that you talk about, even just scoring goals. I mean, scoring 5, you would imagine that is it reminds me of the when Pep took off Erling Haaland in when a game, I think he had 4 or 5.
Yeah,
goals.
I was happy.
Happy, bro. You were like, let's keep that name down.
I'll text him.
Yeah. Pep or Haaland?
Both of them. Because the thing is, I was watching the game, and to be fair, because there's obviously Shearer done it first, Andy Cole, myself, Aguero, Dimitar Berbatov.
Uh-huh.
And then I look at Haaland, I think, right, you're going to be the next one. So when I watched the game, I can't remember who it was against. I remember watching the game thinking,
yeah.
I was thinking, he's going to do it. But then there's a little thing inside you think, you know what? The fact that you're 1 of 5, it seems even bigger than it is.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But eventually I believe that he will do it. But yeah.
But he took him off.
Took him off.
His reasoning.
And he was angry. He was furious.
He didn't want him to get.
And he would know.
Maintain the ambition to try to get it in the next time.
No, but he would know the list. Yeah. Knowing Haaland, he would probably, goal scorers know. So he would have looked at him and be like, okay, these are the 5 players. He probably wouldn't have scored 6. Because obviously no one's ever done that. So yeah, I can imagine that I would have been upset. Even if I scored, because like I said to you, when I scored the 4th, if I hadn't scored the 5th, I would have come off the pitch thinking, what an opportunity.
Coach pulls you in that moment before you get the 5th.
Yeah, which, yeah.
What are you saying under your breath as you walk past the coach?
No, just look.
Yeah?
Okay. Yeah, the looks more than words.
Do me a favor, hit that camera right there with that look. No. Just give us the look. Just give us the look. I just want to see what the look.
Or sometimes you got to just give it that, like, brush the shoulders, that little, like. Because you know, sometimes, like, especially managers, like, because it was Harry Redknapp. Harry knows what I'm like. And you know, sometimes you come off and you have to shake the manager's hand, but it's instead of a proper handshake, it's like a little.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course they know.
Dead fish them.
Yeah, but they know.
Dead fish that dude.
But I don't know if I could have ever done it as Harry though. But Harry would never have taken me off.
Yeah?
No.
When you're the type of striker that I think probably has frustrated more than one center back. But what center back frustrated you the most?
Vincent Kompany was tough to play against.
I can imagine.
Tough. Because a lot of center backs, even with Rio, because it's different with Rio, because I knew Rio, obviously, with England. Mm-hmm. I knew Rio when I was at West Ham in the academy. Him and Vidic were tough. But with a lot of defenders, even during the game, you might get a little smile out of them during the game. You know, even if it's tough on that, but you might get a little smile during the 90 minutes, 95 minutes. But with Vincent Kompany, like, he would smash you and he would just look at you. And then you smile at him and he wouldn't. The level of concentration was unbelievable. You know, I had a good record against City in terms of goals, but he was someone I always enjoyed playing against. I always felt, you know, if I can perform at a level against him and score, then you're doing something right. I played against Marcel Desailly.
Wow.
When I was about 19 at Tottenham. No, sorry, I was at West Ham, sorry. I remember I scored 2 goals at Upton Park. And I remember him grabbing me saying, stop running and that. But he was he was at the back end of his career. Yeah. So this is why. Sort of like playing against these sort of defenders at a young age, it helped my development in a big way. So when I got to, like, I don't know, mid-20s, I'm looking at the players that I played against, Martin Keown's, you know, Sol Campbell's and Marcel Desailly's, and I thought, for me, it didn't really matter who I played against after that.
Yeah.
Even though Ferdinand and Vidic, they were tough. They were the toughest pair for me.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
That is a pair must be insane.
Yeah, and John Terry.
John Terry as well.
John Terry.
Yeah, I mean, you're John Terry.
John Terry would put his head through that brick wall to stop a goal. Honestly, he'll put his head through the brick wall to stop a goal. Yeah. Yeah, or to prevent a shot or whatever it is. He would literally do whatever it takes to keep a clean sheet.
Wow.
Oh, I mean, it's funny seeing that comparison of like you talking about how hungry you are, how hard you need to work. But there are clearly some center backs that came from difficult backgrounds as well.
Tough.
They're putting all that trauma onto you now. Why are you projecting it onto me?
I was a young, the first sort of like experience of stuff like that was probably when I played against Martin Keown. And the funny sort of way, when because I was always confident growing up, so I always backed myself. Like, it didn't really, I always looked forward to the game. I was never nervous in terms of like, oh, I'm playing against Martin Keown. I always felt that, okay, I'm going to show this guy how good I am. Because he must be looking at me thinking, this young kid, I'm going to show him how good I am. And I remember Martin Keown like, sort of like pinching my back, trying to put me off my game. Like, you'd be standing there, it'll pinch your back, or you'll sort of like headbutt the back of your head.
Pre-VAR?
Yeah.
Crazy.
So all these little tricks that obviously that he's done over the years to put people off their game, and I'm thinking, wow, this is another level. This is men's football. This is the Premier League. And I always sort of like, I always felt to myself, no, don't get involved. Don't get frustrated. Just focus on your chance for you to score. And that was it. But in a funny sort of way, I loved it. Even when he was doing it, I loved it.
Really? Because that would throw me off.
Yeah, I loved it.
Or I'd say like,
but you have to.
A little lower, actually. I have a scratch.
I play in a Sunday league and then one.
Yeah, go compare yourself to Jermaine Defoe, Christian. We've all been waiting for it.
It was a corner, and like some dude was like holding me, like didn't let me move inside the box.
Yeah.
And I'm like, bro, it's just a Sunday league little chip. Why are we doing this?
Yeah.
I, that's how I know I'm not at your level even nearly, because I'm just like, I want to go home. Stop bothering me. I've been trying to get ahead on this, dog.
Right. No, we both got to pay rent, dog.
Yeah. But you got to use it in a different way. Because I remember listening to Thierry Henry, and Thierry always said about when he was playing, he wanted someone to kick him. Because then, as soon as someone kicks you, it's like, it wakes you up. And then you're ready. Because you look at him and all of a sudden you...
It's prison rules.
Right? Yeah.
You feel this fire inside you. And I was like that a little bit.
You had to make them an op. Like, yeah, you got to be my ops in order for me to beat
I needed
you.
I needed an argument. I need something to... Not always. Once I needed it, but I wanted it because I just felt like, once you do that, I'm ready to go now.
There was a story about Kevin Garnett. You remember him?
Yeah, of
basketball
course.
Player? Where he was playing... this is when they were on the Celtics. And he was playing with... who's the other dude that was the big three?
Paul Pierce.
So yeah. Paul Pierce was standing next to Kevin Garnett. This European white dude does him, right?
Yeah.
Hits him with a crossover and dunks. And Kevin Garnett goes, yo, did you hear that? He called me the N-word. And Paul Pierce goes, no, he didn't.
No, he didn't.
I was right. He goes, nah, he did. I'm going to get him back.
To get in his head. Yeah, he just wanted something.
He needed the upper hand in that moment.
But Michael Jordan was the same.
Right.
Michael Jordan. I mean, when you talk about obviously athletes, he was the greatest in terms of mentality, right? But even him, he needed a little bit of that on court banter.
Uh-huh.
But what they knew at the time, they didn't realize that you don't get Michael Jordan angry.
Right.
Because then you take him to another level than he is already anyway.
Yeah.
Right. So, but even when you hear him speak, he even says that.
Yeah.
Which is,
it's like Mike Tyson. If I ever had to fight Mike Tyson, I'd be like, you having a good day? I would not. I don't want you to be upset out here.
No, you don't.
No.
You got to be smart.
It's survival instincts.
There's another good one from Kobe Bryant where Iman Shumpert, he was at the Knicks, and he's a guard, and he was guarding Kobe Bryant for three quarters, locking him down. He didn't do anything in the entire game. And at the end of the third quarter, Kobe Bryant told Iman Shumpert, he said, good game, young fella. And he's like, well, we got like 12 minutes left. We're not the game ain't even
over.
That's a long 12 minutes. Complete
body.
That's a long 12 minutes.
That clock started ticking slowly.
Yeah. Even like, I mean, you talk about football, but other sports. I'm a massive boxing fan, but you listen to Floyd Mayweather.
Mm-hmm.
The mentality, like when you trigger these kind of athletes, you take them to a level that you can never imagine.
Right. What's and that for you?
Like I said, but even sometimes. When people doubt you, you know, a lot of players, you know, you get different characters, of course. Sometimes you see things. When you're playing, you see things or you hear people say certain things and then you think, okay. Because there's no point in me going back and forth. And guess what's the point? My mum's always said to me, let your football do the talking. Because once I'm on the pitch, I'm in control. Nothing else matters. I'm in control. So it doesn't really matter what people say. Because if you go back and forth, it's back and forth. And, you know, sometimes away fans, they'll give you a stick and then all of a sudden you score. You just stand there. You score.
How'd that look? How'd that feel?
It's the best. You feel immortal. It's the best feeling ever. So that was always my thing.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it was nice when you felt like you had something to prove.
Did you feel that coming back from, because your stint in Toronto wasn't as long as it should have been for what I'm concerned. Yeah. I'm not a Toronto fan, but I love seeing you in the league. You go from there, you go back to the Premier League, you go to Sunderland.
Yeah.
What was the conversation? Oh, retirement. Yo, you retired. You went to America. Yeah, yeah. You ain't got it anymore. And then you had it. But
yeah.
Did you feel that going back? Did you feel that like but they used that against you?
I'm glad I had that though, because if I didn't have that, if when you get to the back end of your career and people say, oh, you're great, you're this and that, you ain't got nothing to prove, then it's, then naturally it's so easy to take your foot off the gas and just relax. But because I still had that a little bit when I went to the, when I came to the MLS, and people just thought, oh, you know, his legs are gone. You know, he just wants to, you know, come for the lifestyle and stuff like that. I was like, no. You know, I still feel like I need to go there and justify everything and show people how good I am. And to be honest, the only reason, and at the time, I was so happy in Toronto. I loved it. Everything, not just the football, but everything.
It's great.
You know, my teammates, different culture. It was amazing.
Food with seasoning.
The appreciation. Yeah. Oh, bro.
Great Jamaican food?
Bro, you know, is it Loblaws? The
yeah, of course. Store.
Bro,
the
I remember
store, Loblaws.
In England, I remember, I obviously, pescatarian. So I'll go to Waitrose and I'll get my fish, but then I'd always have to go home and season it.
Yeah.
I remember I went to Loblaws one day and I saw like all different types of salmon, all different types of seasoning. I was like, nah, this is unbelievable. Yeah. It was crazy. Like little
you're
things. You're
calling
just your
like, FaceTiming family? Yo, it's crazy
out here. I could just get this easy, put this in the oven. I don't need to like, but honestly, it was.
He's like, bro, raisins aren't considered spicy out here. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's mad, but just everything. And I signed a four-year contract. So I thought, you know what, I'll probably stay even longer. But it was just that thing about, I used to get up in the morning early and watch the Premier League games. Because I remember that season, Liverpool on fire, I remember.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember sitting there thinking, wow, you know, I missed the Premier League, to be honest. And the Toronto fans probably never heard me say this. I just missed it because I was lucky enough to play in the Premier League for my whole career. And I sort of like, I came away from that. And then I got a call to go back. And it was so difficult. Because I'm so competitive, it was just so difficult for me to say no.
The rumor was at the time that you didn't like it.
I loved it.
In MLS, so that you thought you were too big for it.
I loved it. I loved it. Everything, like I said, and everything. And even to the point where, I have family in Windsor. We have family. My granddad was
Windsor,
one of,
just over the bridge in Detroit. Well, no, just so Windsor's so, Canada side.
Canada
of Detroit,
side, yeah. So from Toronto, what's that, about 3-hour drive?
Yeah.
So my granddad was one of 22. So I had, so as the family, we had a lot of family in Windsor.
One of 22?
Exactly. They never had no TV.
Buddy, like, buddy, read a book.
Yeah.
Leave exactly. That woman alone.
One of 22.
Was a what for heaven.
Really? That's what I'm saying. It's crazy.
Yeah. What?
Yeah.
So like I'm saying, so
I gotta get checked. I don't think my family tree is as potent.
Yeah, you need to check that.
One of 22 is insane.
One of 22. So for me, it was a lot deeper than just the football. I just felt like at the time it was part of my journey. I'm meant to be here. Because obviously being a spiritual person, I'm meant to be here. It's part of my journey. The fact that like all the family. So when I hear that, people say, I was like, because when I left, I saw that and I was like, this is crazy. I loved it. And this is why I signed a four-year contract. But just that thing about, you know, just going back to the Premier League, to play in the Premier League again at the age of 32. 32. It was just, I just couldn't turn it down.
Yeah.
I just couldn't.
Real quick, I just want to say, how long after you signed with Toronto, what's the gap between you signing, or at least news of you release that you signed it, and Drake texting you? Like, how long did that take?
No, Drake called me before I put pen to paper, I think.
Agent Drake.
Yeah. So if he ever sees this, I'm waiting for that dinner.
We promised the dinner.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Damn. Yeah.
And you can imagine, obviously being a huge Drake fan.
Yeah.
And then the phone rings. I'm like, who's this? It's Drake. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, right.
Yeah.
You're phoning. Okay, so I actually thought it was Aaron Lennon.
Pretending to be Drake?
Yeah. Because obviously all the boys knew I was leaving. obviously this because the season starts in March.
Yeah.
So this was like January, February. So I was still at Tottenham. I was out for dinner with my cousins and, you know, private number. So I thought it was Aaron. I thought, no. If that's Aaron, that's an unbelievable Canadian accent, by the way. Do you know what I mean? I didn't think he had that in him.
So, yeah, yeah. It's because we're practicing.
So at this point, I've gone quiet on the phone. I said, okay. But I knew that Drake was due to be in London with a weekend, on that weekend. So I'm asking questions. I said, yeah, you're coming. He said, yeah, I'm coming to London, blah, blah, blah. I thought, wow, this is crazy. And then that's how it started. You got to come to Toronto. You would love it. You know, I'll take you out. Like, everyone's looking forward to you coming. So I was just like, wow.
Were you surprised that Toronto has a similar accent to like North London, like the Jamaican kind of accent?
Yeah,
like,
but if you even
a lot of wagwan, a lot of ends, yeah.
But and even in a lot of the lyrics in Drake's songs, it's like, wow, this guy's from like around the corner from where I'm from.
Yeah.
From the East End, you know what I mean? And yeah. I know he spends a lot of time in London and that, but like being in the change rooms, listening to some of the Canadian boys, I was like, this is weird. Honestly, it's crazy. The same sort of like. Honestly,
the Caribbean culture is big there.
We're like used to it now. I mean, I had a similar feeling at the Fan Fest when I met someone from Burnley. I never heard a Burnley accent before.
No. Oh, dude, that's
right here. I'm just like, what is this? I've heard all the British accents.
I thought she got stung by a bee on her tongue. You know what I mean? I said, clearly there's something going on.
We gotta go to
hospital, dog.
No, it's different. Burnley accent different.
They're different.
Manchester, Liverpool, Newcastle, it's all different.
It really is.
Yeah.
I want to ask this before we wrap up about your time in Tottenham. And you left Tottenham. And then shout out to Carter because he was the one who reminded me of this.
But he was like, he left Tottenham?
But you left Tottenham and you left in January. And then Tottenham won a trophy that summer. What was that end of that season? Was there did you feel a certain type of way to not get to experience that? Given especially Tottenham's history with trophies?
Yeah, of course. Naturally, of course. Yeah, because at the time, you just don't know. Like, because I knew I was obviously going to Portsmouth. And that sort of like little period, I wasn't playing much under the manager. One day Ramos, for whatever reason, because I was still scoring goals. And I remember I played in, I think it was the quarterfinal, I scored against Man City away from home. We won 1-0. I scored and we went down to 10 men. And then I was sort of like the one that was sacrificed. He took me off. And maybe because I was spoiled before, I never come off. Like, goal scorers don't come off. So obviously, of course, I'm a little bit upset, but it's about the team. So we won 1-0. And then when I remember watching the final when I left and I had that thing, I thought, this is crazy because I played such a big part in the club getting there in terms of my goals, but then you've missed the final. And the only thing that sort of like got me through that was seeing my friends lift it. Seeing Ledley King lift that because I love Ledley. So seeing Ledley and Robbie lift the trophy, I was like, because forget about everything else that happens. These are like, this is your family. I mean, I spent a lot of time with these players. And it's quite funny you say that, really, because years later, I got a phone call and actually got presented with a medal.
Wow.
Right? Hey. So, and they said to me, have you never heard about like your medal? Because I think I played in most of the games and I scored a lot of goals. I was like, no, not really. But thinking about it now, I know obviously players have done that before, or I suppose it's probably no different if, I don't know, I stayed at Tottenham and didn't play in a final, or I was injured or on a bench.
Exactly, yeah. You're still deserved.
I've missed finals before because I remember, I think it was the FA Cup. I missed it. I broke my foot and I missed the final against Man United. So yeah, and that. But so yeah, I suppose obviously getting the medal was special. But at the same time, to experience being there with your teammates and like I said, see Ledley lift it, being next to him, that would have been like
Earned it, right? Like you earned part of that trophy. Like, do you ever think of doing it? Who was the dude on Chelsea that got changed? Was it John Terry who got changed back into the kid?
Yeah.
He was injured. He got changed to the kid for the trophy. You should have just thrown on the Tottenham jersey and showed up. Just showed up to the trophy lift.
But a lot of people said a lot. He got a lot of like negativity.
Stick. We know what that means here. Yeah.
Right? Stick, bro.
Yeah.
So, and then sometimes I look at it and I think, well, why shouldn't he do that? Because that shows you how much, he's a winner.
Yeah.
And he wants to feel a part of it. Why can't he get, like, I know maybe some players wouldn't have done that, but he's the captain. And he deserves what he's achieved up until that point. Like, he deserves that, he can do what he wants. John Terry, like, he's the captain, he's lifted trophies before, and then if he wants to get changed and celebrate with the players, then what's wrong with that? But
Yeah, but if you're not a Chelsea fan, it's great to make fun of him, you know, because he was such a tough defender.
And obviously that's coming from a Tottenham man. Yeah. Chelsea, but yeah.
And then, look, there is the Premier League in itself is mired in a lot of like culture and tradition and changing things. I just saw this. The Premier League in USA posted a video. I forgot the guy who posted it, but about comparing. And in the NBA, we have a six-man of the year award, right? So the best bench player also gets an award. And he basically...
In the NBA.
Yeah. So the best player that is not a starter...
Like a super sub.
A super sub.
You come in and you help the team every time you come in.
And so he's basically making the argument that the Premier League should have an award for the best bench player.
Do you know what's funny, though? You see, with that, I'm trying to think how the player receiving the award would feel about that.
Right.
If you won that, you probably wouldn't want to show for the photo.
Right.
So yeah, yeah. Because remember, you're dealing with egos. And in sport, I do feel like when you say egos, sometimes people look at it like it's negative. But I feel like sometimes at the highest level, you need an ego, because you have to compete at the highest level, like consistently. So you need something about you. You have to back yourself. Because if you don't, then, I mean, who's going to believe in you if you don't believe in yourself? So, but I just feel like if you gave that to someone, and also as well, of course, you take it. You, okay, thank you. Yeah. But at the same time, I know players would be like,
I don't really want this.
Right? Not really going on the mantle.
And also, the other players around him, because if that was me and one of the boys going, of course you're going to give them a little bit of stick.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Because it's all about relationships. Football's all about relationships. You give it, you take it. Right? But like, but I don't know if you could do that.
Yeah.
Like, imagine at the tail end of the career, they're like, and the old man award goes to, you'd be like,
That's what I'm saying.
I don't think I want this.
Yeah. It's an award, but not every award is good awards.
Yeah, you're like, I'll take the watch. I'll take the Rolex that comes with it. Yeah. But I don't need the, I do want to ask before we go, you get a chance to play. Now that I know you loved playing in Toronto and playing in MLS, the first question I want to know is, what player did you think, because we hear this a lot, how did this guy not end up in the Premier League? Like, how are you stuck in MLS, or how are you only ever played in MLS? Like, someone that just surprised you with how good they are. Could have been on your team or any other team.
I mean, there was like loads. Even Dero.
Oh, Dero is a legend, by the way.
And I have to give him a shout out and his flowers, because obviously, not just football, but as a person as well. And I knew very quickly when I arrived, this guy is a legend.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, when you call players uncle.
Yeah.
So I come in and call him uncle, because he's been there and he's done it. And I've seen a lot of clips and even seen him up and close in training. And at that point, it was sort of like the back end of his career. It wasn't quick, but he was sharp in there. How sharp was with his feet. And you could just tell straight away, this guy's special. And I used to think, wow, I would love to play with him when he was a lot younger. But then I look at him and I thought, and I just think, wow, someone like you, you would have done so well in the Premier League, because technically you were so gifted that you would have been like, the fans would have loved him.
The celebration, and
his son.
Seattle now.
The boy, his son now, same blood and that, but yeah, he was proper. Yeah,
he was techie.
Dero was.
When people mention Dero, I always tell the story. One of our dear friends, a journalist, he was over at The Athletic for a long time, Pablo Maurer, told the story of when he was covering DC United and Dero was playing there. And it was a season that they were terrible. The team was really, really bad. And because in MLS, we don't have relegation.
No
promotion relegation.
They were not in the playoffs.
They were not in the playoffs. And so he asked the question. He's a young journalist. And he asked Dero, like, you know, how do you kind of get up for these games given that they don't matter? And it's like late in the season. And Dero was like, it don't matter.
Yeah.
Like, these games, our jobs are on the line. Like, we might not be here next season. And for Pablo, he always tells it as like, oh, that's just a reminder. You're like, even though there's no promotion relegation, there are some people that are built that way and still have a strong desire to play football professionally and respect their job.
But even like, it's a good question when you what you just asked about, you know, players who do I think that maybe could have played in the Premier League. But a lot of it, even when I went, you know, a lot of the conversations were like, oh, what's it like to play in the Premier League? And I could tell that a lot of these players, that was their dream. You know, because that's the pinnacle, you know, to get to England. Not in England, though, because even the Championship, they're good leagues in that. But to play in the Premier League, like, it was, of course, it's stuff of dreams.
Yeah.
And that was always the conversation.
Really?
And this is why, because that was always the conversation. So this is why when I had the opportunity to go back to the Premier League, it was like, you know, I have to go. And then, like I said, 32. And then I played for England again when I was 34.
Yeah.
So then now I sit here and I look back, I feel like, you know what, if I didn't go, I never would have played for England again. And all the goals I scored from that point forward, I never would have done that. Probably wouldn't have been the top 10 goal scorers. And in my story with Bradley at Sunderland, I probably never would have met Bradley. So it, you have to look at things sometimes and be like, you know what?
Yeah. These things you brought up England. Is World Cup's coming up next year. Is it coming home?
I hope so.
You hope so.
And the thing is, we've come so close.
Yeah.
In the last few major tournaments. And I just look at someone said to me the other day, what's your starting 11 England team? And this was probably the first time ever.
And did you put yourself in there?
Yeah. No, but this is the first time ever. I'm just like, you know what? I don't know. We have that much talent now.
Yeah.
With these group of players and the players that have been there and done it in terms of having the experience of playing in major tournaments, plus the new additions. I'm just like, I couldn't even tell you right now the starting 11.
Really?
I couldn't even tell you, because even if you look at the last few England fixtures and you talk about the Bellinghams and Fodens and Cole Palmers and, you know, that's not played recently. Yeah. I think, wow. So, I mean, we'll see. But if that happens, wow. The celebrations here?
Yeah.
And in England? Crazy.
Well, I'll tell you, it's not going to happen. It's England. I do have one last question.
Y'all can't even beat the United States.
Never beat us in a World Cup. Never undefeated. We beat y'all. Y'all never beat us. But last question. Since your playing career, now that you're just watching the game on Sundays or Saturdays, you ever think to yourself, bro, that guy has got what I had? Any player at all, any league, anywhere, you think that little bit of stardust that Jermaine Defoe brought to the league, this kid's got it.
Premier League?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to look at the centre forwards. I think probably Haaland's the one that you look at and you think.
What a flex.
No, but he's the one that looks like, I mean, he's a killer in a box. You know, a lot of people talk about he doesn't have too many touches and he doesn't get involved in a game. Listen, you're not in a team to do that. Why are you in the team? You're in the team to score goals. It's all about numbers as a centre forward. And I watch this guy play, and even when he misses, you just know that he'll score the next one.
Yeah?
Yeah.
If you had a bad game for 88 minutes, but you score a goal and the team wins, did you have a good game?
I've done my job. Yeah.
That's what y'all pay me for, right?
I've done my job. And you know what I mean? So, like, if I've had loads of games before and I think, I've been quiet today. Then you end up scoring. But at the end of the day, I think if you ask that question to any centre forward, you know, that's in the top 10, they'll say the same thing. I've done my job. That's my job.
Yeah. We had Troy Deeney on the show and he goes, yeah, what? You asked me for goals. I got you a goal.
That's my job because it's the hardest thing to do.
Yeah.
In football is to score. It's the hardest thing to do. And yeah, of course, when you do it, it's not even about, like, that's why when people talk about Haaland and all the touches, I said it's irrelevant. It doesn't matter how many touches, because at the end of it, in 10, 20 years' time, when people look back and feel like, you know, this guy scored 500 goals or 600 goals, like Cristiano Ronaldo, when he first got to the Premier League and as a young kid, and people talk about now he's got no end product, but he's got all the tricks, but no end product. And all of a sudden, he's got that 40 goals, got the Ballon d'Or, because he wanted to go to the next level. And he asked the question, how do I get to the next level? Well, if you want to go to the next level, you have to score 40, 50 goals. Okay, I'll do that then. And then the rest is history. Damn. People don't talk about Ronaldo. Oh, he's done stepovers and he played every game he played well. No, he scores 1,000 goals.
Damn. Bro, what an honor.
Yeah. That's a good enough resume. And speaking of people with good resumes, Jermaine Defoe, you are an absolute legend. It's an absolute honor for us to welcome you in our...
I didn't even notice this trophy was here, dog. That's how interested I am in what you're saying, bro.
What did you say? Didn't notice it?
No, I barely noticed this was here. I'm an Arsenal fan. I don't even recognize what this is. Like.
It's Arteta, really. Didn't see it.
Please, Arteta, I need this.
I mean, I'm an Everton fan, so I want to melt it down for some sort of other tool.
Yeah, Everton, yeah?
Yeah.
Let's go to a new stadium.
Yeah. Okay,
Tim Howard.
I'm excited.
Amazing.
Okay. Yeah?
Yeah, amazing.
Bro, Jermaine, ladies and gentlemen, Jermaine Defoe, everybody.
Thank you so much.
Cheers,
bro.
Thank you, man.